Okay, so first of all, I'd like to thank organizer inviting this workshop. So today, I'd like to talk about the thermodynamic evidence of the phase transition at the onset of pseudo gap in YBCO and Mercury 1201. Most of the work has been done by graduate student Sato and Murayama and Dr. Kasahara, and in collaboration with Takashi Bauchi, University of Tokyo. And very nice single crystals of YBCO has been provided by Nishizaki, Kyushu Sangyo University, and Batman Kaima's group, Stuttgart. And the Mercury 1201 compound has been provided by Uchiyama, Springwade. And Yongoku Moon, a theorist, gave us many important comments on the analysis. Yeah, in my talk, I'd like to start with the introduction. Then I talk about the in-plane torque magnetometry, which is the main technique of my talk. After that, I'll focus on the pneumatic phase transition in double layer orthorhombic YBCO and single layer tetragonal Mercury 1201. So if time allows, I'd like to talk about the pneumatic susceptibility in BISCO. Okay, the pseudo gap is the most controversial issue in the study of high tissue cuprate. So this is a phase diagram shown by many people yesterday. And the most important question is whether the temperature, T star, which defines the onset of the pseudo gap, is crossover or phase transition. In crossover scenario, so this T star line is a temperature of the precursor of the superconductivity, or the temperature at which the preformed pair is formed. In the phase transition scenario, the important subject is what kind of symmetries are broken at the T star, translational, rotational, or time reversal symmetries. So let me discuss the phase transition scenario quite briefly. The experiment that suggests a phase transition has been reported by resonant ultrasound spectroscopy. Here's a of YBCO. This is a phase diagram of YBCO. And ultrasound experiment shows the elastic coefficient shows a kink at the T-star here. And critical slowing down occurs above T-star. However, according to J.R. Cooper, the data do not support the phase transition, and the data can be interpreted by non-equilibrium effects such as oxygen realization. Then the result seems to be controversial. Okay, broken time reversal symmetry has been reported by a polarized neutron scattering experiment. Actually, the Bourget et al. Reported the magnetic ordering below T star. Because there is no uniform magnetization is observed. So this unusual magnetic order has been discussed in terms of intra-intercell order arising from the circulating current loops associated by Chandra Verma. However, no observation of such a order by NMR. Then this may be due to the fluctuation. Actually, the neutron the time scale is much shorter than the NMR time scale. So this order may be fluctuating. Actually, recently the MUSR measurement by Doug McLaren and Ray Xu reported the critical slowing down above T star here. So they proposed a fluctuating intra-intercell magnetic order. Actually, the MUSR time scale is shorter than neutron, but longer than neutron, but shorter than NMR. However, different interpretation has been posted on archive by Sonia. So still seems to be controversial. The broken time reversal symmetry also reported by a polar car effect by Kapitolnik's group. But they observed the non-zero car rotation at this temperature. But this temperature is well below the pseudo gap line. Okay. Broken inversion symmetry or C2 symmetry has been reported by, actually this subject has been talked by, David Hirsch yesterday, and they report mirror symmetry around the area is broken by optical second harmonic generation experiment. Okay, this occurs at exactly at the pseudogap temperature. Yeah, it is well established the broken translational symmetry occurs well below the pseudogap temperature. Actually, the short range CW order at this temperature has been reported by many groups. The broken rotational symmetry has been discussed by many people, many groups. Actually, here is a doping dependence of the in-plane anisotropy, rho A divided by rho B, reported by Andrew. Actually, near the optimal doping, the anisotropy is very large because of the chain conduction. But anisotropy decreases with decreasing the oxygen content. But after low doping regime, again the resistivity anisotropy increases. However, if we plot the pseudogap temperature here, nothing happens. So no discernible anomaly is observed in the anisotropy at T star. So this means the resistivity may not be a good probe for the rotational symmetry breaking. That is, rotational symmetry breaking has been clearly observed by Nernst coefficient by Glutti Alpha's group. Actually, they show the anisotropy of the Nernst coefficient increases rapidly below this temperature here. But at the same time, later, they also observe the anisotropy of the Nernst coefficient again increase around this line. And also this increase when system goes into the CDW state as shown here. And this temperature will coincide the temperature at which the second derivative of the resistivity shows a maximum here. So this line corresponds to here. Okay, so broken rotational symmetry also reported by neutron inertial scattering experiment. Here's the result by Kaimer's group. Which is the neutron, this data is taken by here. So neutron inertial scattering shows a very large anisotropy. This means a spin excitation. The rotational symmetry seems to be broken in the magnetic excitation spectrum. The broken rotational and translational symmetries has been are reported by many measurements of the STM. Here is a very recent experimental result. These also report the density wave modulation along these directions, indicating the translational symmetry breaking. At the same time, they also observe the report the OX oxygen and OY oxygen become inequivalent, indicating the rotational symmetry is broken. But this measurement has been done at very low temperature, below TC. At high temperature, STM measurement has been reported by Ariyazan's group. They claim that this fluorescent spot here arises from the fluctuating stripes. So this intensity seems to appear below the T star line here. So this means a broken rotational and translational symmetries may be broken below T star. But this is not consistent with the X-ray measurement. Yeah. So anyway, in my opinion, the thermodynamic evidence of the phase transition at this line is still lacking. This is the motivation of our experiment. So let me discuss the magnetic torque, which I'm going to discuss today. Let me discuss what the magnetic torque tells us. So magnetic torque is the magnetization times magnetic field. So this is the angular derivative of the free energy. Therefore, this is a thermodynamic quantity. And this is a direct probe of the magnetic anisotropy. Actually, if we rotate if we measure the magnetic torque in magnetic field rotating within the AB plane, the two-fold symmetry is given, magnetic torque of the two-fold symmetry is given by these equations. So if the C4 symmetry is preserved, so chi A equal chi B and chi AB is zero. So in this case, we, the two-fold symmetry does not appear. On the other hand, if C4 symmetry is broken, chi A is not equal to chi BB, and or chi AB is not equal to zero. In this case, we expect the two-fold oscillations. Therefore, the magnitude torque is a Schrödinger test for the oriented rotational symmetry breaking. We use the micro cantilever system. This has a very high sensitivity. Actually, the sensitivity is three orders of magnitude better than commercial squid at 4 Tesla. In our measurement, we use the vector magnet and the mechanical rotating system. Using this system, we can rotate the magnetic field with a misalignment less than 0.05 degree. Actually, we use this system to study the hidden order of granular rotating silicon II and the nematicity of iron pericytes. Let me discuss, let me show you how to detect the nematicity. So in this figure, here is a cantilever system, and this is a crystal, and this is a silicon tip. And this yellow arrow is a magnetic field. So if we rotate the magnetic field with an AB plane, so this red arrow is a torque. So the, some problem occurs with the computer. Because of this torque, this silicon tip deviates from the equilibrium position, and we detect the deviation by this piezo resistance. Then using this technique, we can observe the oscillation, two-fold oscillation. But if the C4 symmetry is preserved, if we rotate the magnetic field, nothing happens. So we have measured the two systems, YBCO and Mercury 1201. So here is a crystal of YBCO. The typical size of the YBCO is order of 200 micrometer. So let me first discuss YBCO. This is a phase diagram of YBCO. So needless to say, YBCO has an orthorhombic crystal structure, and because of kappa O change, and this has a double kappa of two planes. So this is because this orthorhombicity acts as a weak external field. So this external field gives rise to two effects. First is if nematicity, nematic domain appears, it tends to align. The second effect is it breaks C4 symmetry. So we have done the four different crystals here and here, and with different doping. And three of them, the crystals are naturally untwinned. Well, here is the angular dependence of the magnetic torque. So we clearly observe the nearly perfect sinusoidal curve at all temperature we measured. And in this case, with chi, from the sign, chi A is always larger than chi BB. Chi B is the direction of change. So the chi AB is always equal to zero. This means nematicity appears along the 100 direction. Okay, here's the temperature dependence of the amplitude of the anisotropy, or nematicity, for the 70 Kelvin YBCO. With decreasing temperature, the nematicity decreases gradually and shall increase rapidly. And we can see clearly the cusp structure at T tau here. Okay, because the torque is a magnetic quantities, the cusp, kink indicates a signature of second order phase transition. Like this. And another important point is here is a C double transition temperature. So no discernible anomaly is observed at the CW transition temperature here. Actually, to discuss the nematicity properly, we introduced a dimensionless parameter, eta. Actually, we divide the anisotropy by uniform susceptibility. So if we divide the uniform susceptibility, the eta is nearly constant above t tau, and it increases below t tau. Okay, so eta is nearly constant at t tau, and but still anisotropy remains. So this anisotropy arises from the lattice orthonormicity coming from the coupled chains. For this material, 70 Kelvin, YBCO, this amplitude is nearly 3%. Okay, here is the data for 90 Kelvin YBCO. So again, the nematicity decrease and shows an increase at low temperatures. And we observe the kink structure at T tau here. And dimensionless parameter eta is nearly constant above T tau, but it increases rapidly. So in this case, the anisotropy above T tau is 60.6%, slightly larger than the previous case. Okay, here is the data for the 60 Kelvin YBCO. So again, in this case, the anisotropy decreases gradually and increases rapidly below T tau. And again, we observe the, in this case, we have the kink-like structure here, T tau. And again, nothing happens at the CDW transition temperature. And if we normalized by uniform susceptibility, again, the eta is nearly temperature independent. And below theta, eta increase. And in this case, anisotropy of high temperature is nearly 0.4%, much less than the previous case. Okay, all of these results show we put theta here. So theta exactly coincides with the T-star line. This indicates the nematic phase transition seems to occur at this T-star line. However, we have a serious problem because YBCO is orthonormic structure. So the no evidence of the symmetry breaking. Actually, the tetragonal symmetry is already broken even at high temperature. So to solve this problem, we performed the analysis. We performed the following analysis. Because eta T star is constant, eta is constant above T star, so we subtract the background anisotropy from lattice constant from the from eta. So we discussed this excess nematicity. So we plot excess nematicity for three different materials as a function of T over T star. So with increasing doping, excess nematicity increase. So in this figure, we plot excess nematicity as a function of eta T star, background anisotropy. So we extrapolate, delta eta excess nematicity is nearly proportional to the background nematicity. But what is important is we have a finite intersect here. So I'd like to emphasize, so eta T star equals zero here means tetragonal limit. So this means a finite nematicity is preserved even at eta T star equals zero, namely tetragonal limit here. So the finite delta eta is observed at all temperatures below T star. So this means that even in the tetragonal limit, we have a nematicity. This means a spontaneous C4 symmetry breaking. We plot delta eta normalized by, Yong-Gu Moon mentioned, if this is a second order phase transition, we should show some scaling behavior. So that we plot excess nematicity divided by at 0.7 T star as a function of T over T star. As you see, all curve crops into the single curve. So this pink point shows a tetragonal limit. So summarizing the result, we observe the kink anomaly of the nematicity, anisotropy at T star. And the finite nematicity remains even in tetragonal limit. So the scaling behavior of delta eta So based on this result, we conclude the second order phase transition occurs at T-star. One of the interesting point is delta eta, critical exponent beta is larger than unity. So this superlinear behavior is very different from the mean field behavior or a 2D Ising model, which the beta is 1/2 and 1/8. Okay. So next, I'd like to move on to the result of the Mercury 1201. So as you know, this material is a tetragonal symmetry and because no Kappa chains and single Kappa of two planes. So simple crystal, it has a very simple crystal structure. But phase diagram is very similar to YVCO. Yeah, here is a phase diagram of Mercury 1201. Just a broken time reversal symmetry also provided by polarized neutron scattering experiment. Actually, the magnetic ordering occurs. And that's the same temperature, resistivity shows the deviation from the linear relations. Again, this behavior has been discussed in terms of the intra-unit cell order arising from the circulating current loops by Chandra-Verma. Okay, CW transition temperature also provided by measurement, X-ray measurement, shown here. The CW phase shows have some domes, very similar to YVCO. Okay, here is the result of the magnetic torque. Actually, we use the, this is a cantilever, this is a crystal, single crystal. Actually, we use a very tiny single crystal, which is a size less than 100 micro-ohm. Actually, I cannot see this crystal. Only the greatest student can see this tiny crystal. So the this is a result of the magnetic torque along this line. At 440 Kelvin here, we never observe the two-fold oscillation. But however, at below 240 Kelvin, we have the clear two-fold oscillations. Actually, we use the very tiny single crystals because if the nematicity appears, it may have the domains. So if we use a large crystal, domain may cancel. That's why we use a very tiny crystal. So the tiny crystal measurement shows a clear nematicity below this temperature. So this means this material does not have many domains in this length scale. So the in this case, crystal symmetry is tetragonal. This means the emergence of C2 symmetry in tetragonal lattice directly indicates the evidence of symmetry breaking. Okay, here's the angular variation at low temperature. So I'd like to draw attention to the sign. At theta phi equals 0 and 180 degree, it shows a peak. This means chi A equal chi B. And chi AB is not equal to 0. Oscillation is cosine. This means nematicity appears along 100 direction. This is 45 degree different from YVCO. Actually, at first, we expected the direction of nematicity is the same as YVCO. But rather surprisingly, the observed anisotropy is different from YVCO. Well, this means something like that. In YVCO, which is like this, and Mercury like this. And when the torque is maximum in YVCO, the torque is zero in Mercury 1201. Okay. So this is a temperature dependence of the anisotropy, nematicity, for two different Mercury compounds. Okay, so at this T star, the nematicity appears. This T star exactly coincides with the T star determined by other measurement. So nematicity is near, in this case, nematicity is zero with the error bar above T star. And at low temperature, is deviate from other extrapolation. So this almost coincides with the sea level transition temperature. So in contrast to YVCO, nematicity is influenced by CDW formation in mercury compound. But, X-ray measurement shows that CDW formation occurs along 100 or 010 directions. This means direction of the nematicity is 100, while that of the CDW 1000. So that this means the nematicity is not related to the CDW formation fluctuations. And the CDW formation reduces the amplitude of nematicity. This indicates the CDW and the nematicity is a competing order or intertwined orders. Okay, this is a recent result of the elastoresistance measurement in BISCO done by Takashibachi's group. The pneumatic susceptibility is defined by the lattice strain derivative of the electronic pneumaticity given these equations. So they observe they clearly observe the Curie-Weiss behavior. So but deviation from the Curie-Weiss behavior is observed here. The deviation of the Curie-Weiss behavior has been reported in iron pericytes. So this temperature coincides with the pseudogap temperature determined by Alpes or Raman experiment. So this also provides evidence of the nematicity. Okay, let me discuss the consistency or inconsistency with the candidate for the phase transition at TISTA, which breaks the rotation symmetry breaking, rotation symmetry, sorry. The stripe order and the density wave order breaks the translational and rotation symmetry breaking. But no diffraction evidence for the translational symmetry breaking above CDW. Another possibility is the Pomerantian instability. This breaks the rotation symmetry. But the question is, can above this scenario explain the nematicity around 100 in Mercury 1201? This is my question. And the circular counting loop predicts the nematicity in 110 direction in single layer and 100 in double layer compound. But my question is magnetic ordering has never been observed by NMR. So this may be fluctuations. But our measurement is a DC measurement. So I don't know how to reconcile the NMR experiment or our measurement. Okay, the open question is why does nematicity appear along 110 for mercury 1201 and 100 for YVCO? So maybe the difference comes from the single layer and the double layer compound. And another question is what is the relationship between the nematicity and CDW? Why the nematicity is suppressed by the formation of CDW? The why does the uniform nematicity k equals zero or nematicity open up the pseudo gap? And why is the amplitude of nematicity show the superlinear behavior as a function of T over T star? But the most important question is what is the origin of nematicity? Okay, let me summarize my talk. We report the result of in-plane torque magnetometry, which is very sensitive to the magnetic anisotropy. So that we provide the thermodynamic evidence for the second order pneumatic transition occurs at T star here. So this provides strong support for the presence of quantum critical point. So nematicity occurs along 100 for single layer mercury 1201 and 100 direction in double layer YVCO. This is open question. Finally, the CDW formation reduces the amplitude of nematicity and CDW and nematicity is intertwined orders. Okay, thank you very much.
If I may be allowed a couple of remarks. First of all, the major symmetry statement that in IPCO it's along 100 and in Mercury it's in 1201 is what is to be expected from loop current order.
It's because
if you have a single layer system, the order parameter, okay, you already have that there. If you have a single layer system as drawn in top, that's in the diagonal direction. In IPCO, and therefore we would expect that in that direction. In a bilayer system with two layers, the neutron scattering refinements show that the successive layers in a unit cell have the order parameter 90 degree rotated, which would then give you per unit cell something in the 110 direction. That's point one. Point two is that you're in that case, the what you call nematic or the greater lattice, the distortion, will have to be will come in as a higher order in the order parameter. So the fact that your temperature dependence shows a exponent larger than one is consistent with that. That also answers the final question which you raised, this one, fluctuation. If you have an order parameter which is fluctuating at some damn slow rate of 10 to the minus 8 seconds, whatnot, and if you observe something which is related to a quadratic or higher power of that, that will always have a DC component. And so that takes care of that issue.
Okay.
In a microphone.
And the fact that these things coincide, where we have independent evidence for time reversal breaking accompanied by a vector order parameter, it seems fairly absurd to think of something outside what other experiments have already shown.
So I have a question before I start raising. So here, well, you said in the beginning, which I think most of us would assume, that the orthorhombic distortion, right, the chains are small perturbation. But if I look here, right, your background is huge. You have your signal is 10% only on top of the background,
That's 3%.
So, you say that your order parameter being 10% of our background is sign effect?
No,
let me ask him the question. Sorry. So, if you have such a huge a background, how can we extrapolate the tetragonal case with confidence, since you're not in the weak symmetry breaking regime?
If you look at our, this data, the excess nematicity is proportional to the background nematicity. So that's what we can express to our tetragonal limit.
But that relies on you making a linear. Yeah. Okay.
So we have another point here recently that it's also linear. That's what we can express to our tetragonal limit.
Yeah, good. I had two questions. One is, I think you made a comment about it, but I didn't catch it. What is the relative magnitude of the effect in the mercury and the YBCO?
Okay, in YBCO, let me show the mercury is an order of delta chi, but we cannot make a component directly, but order of, in mercury, order of 10 to minus 7, but this is one half of the YBCO.
What if you compare the ADA?
Actually, we don't have the data of the uniform sensibility of mercury compound. That's why we cannot compare directly. But if you compare the absolute value of chi AB, the mercury compound is much less than YBCO.
As much as.
Yeah.
And the second question is, when you do this, is the crystal on a substrate, or is it freestanding?
Oh yeah. Okay, this one.
It's only
yeah.
What?
Yeah, we are touched by glue.
So.
Yeah, look at this one. So here is a cantilever, a silicon tip, and we are just crystal, but we have the glue here, only here.
Yeah, the crystal, I see, goes up. So it's not constrained. The shape of the crystal could change if it wanted to.
What is that white stuff? This is glue, but glue is very tiny.
The glue is tiny. Yeah, fine. The crystal is sticking up.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, crystal is free from the, most of the crystal is free from the glue.
Okay.
So everyone is worrying about the glue effect.
So there's nothing constraining the shape of the crystal. It can distort.
Yeah, I think so.
No, glue is glue. Glue is glue.
No, but yeah. it's only glued on one side.
Yeah, but this is very different from the iron peptide. Yeah, there might be some strain here. But I very hard to believe that. Yeah, but if it's a glue, though, why the this pneumatic appears exactly coincides with the temperature?
So that was going to be my question: is can you distinguish whether this is again a pneumatic susceptibility versus a pneumatic order from this measurement? Is it clear to you or to everybody?
Oh, the question?
Yeah, that was a question. Imagine that there is actually, let's say, strain,
yeah.
right? And there is a pneumatic susceptibility. Could you distinguish between that and the presence of a true pneumatic order?
You want to catch your point there? Yeah. I guess your extrapolation
does not zero.
Yeah.
And YBCO, yeah. The argument that there's order and it's trying to limit.
Yeah, it's wrong. Yeah.
I see. Okay, thank you.
So, regarding the data on the mercury compound, do you have any results closer to optimal doping?
Yeah.
Does the effect go away?
Yeah, the mercury compound. Question is doping. Yeah, doping here and here.
What happens at higher doping?
Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal of the higher doping mercury 1201. We only have these two crystals. Yeah, actually, we want to do that experiment.
Okay, thanks.
Yuji, let me repeat the same question that Raphael asked. Maybe the answer was given, but it's not here there. You said that you can subtract background because I have two different samples for two different backgrounds.
Yes.
Right? In one case that you showed us, the effect was 10% on top of background.
Yes.
This was red curve, I guess.
Yeah.
For the blue curve, when the background is off by a factor of 3, is the effect still 10% on top of background?
Yeah, I think so.
So you always subtract something that the whole effect is always 10% of top of background.
Yeah, actually, something like that, because this one. Yeah, for example, this case where...
Yes. Yeah, and then you have another sample where background goes off by factor.
Yeah, the nematosis is nearly 10% of the background.
Right,
in this case. And again, in this case, nearly 10% of the background.
So, Yuji, so you know in YBCO, perhaps you can show the phase diagram of YBCO. The magnetic, the T mag, you know, the onset of the magnetic signal, there's more data at lower doping. So if you go at about 8%, the neutron data, so the triangles, the yellow triangles, if you go to low doping, it falls off the T star line. It goes back down at low doping.
Yeah, this one, like this, you think?
Yeah, I don't. You didn't plot the point, but there's a point at 8%.
Oh, we didn't plot it. But I don't know that such a data.
Yeah, and it goes down by a factor of 2 almost.
Okay.
So somehow the magnetic neutron signal falls off the T star line at low doping.
I see.
And so I think it would be extremely interesting if you could get a sample of YBCO at 8% and see whether your pneumaticity follows T star or whether it follows the magnetic neutron signal.
Okay.
They go in very different directions. So you can then decide whether it's a signature of the pseudo gap or whether it's a signature of the magnetic neutron phase. You know.
Okay, thank you.
So you talked also about domains, Yuji. So I was wondering if you, for the mercury sample, did you warm up and cool again to see?
We have done that many times, the cooling up and cooling down. But we never observed the hysteresis. Yeah, all the same. So we are worrying about some domain structure.
You talked about the possible presence of domains and the need to go to these very small samples. Have you tried larger samples? Does the effect become diminished?
No, we didn't try. This is a real time-consuming experiment. We don't have time for the size dependence.
So a related question is, have you taken the same sample and cycled more than once to see if the size of the signal varies?
Yeah, actually, we did not measure the size dependence.
No, but even with the same sample, if
sometimes doesn't change at all.
It doesn't change if you do it several times.
Yes. So that means the domain is determined by some shape of the crystal or something.
Right. And that is one of the characteristics of liquid crystals, is that when you put them in a container, they form actually determined macroscopic textures.
Yeah, okay. Actually, we have done the field cooling and the zero field cooling, but nothing changes.
Any more questions or comments?
So let me just ask a quick experimental question. So you, in the very beginning, said that you have a very high alignment precision of 0.05 degrees.
Yeah.
How did you actually do that? Because of course, if you as you get any misalignment, you would get a precision that looks exactly like that signal. So how do you get that that type of precision?
Okay. Maybe I can show the data how to align the crystal. Okay. I can't find it. Okay, actually, we measure the AC plane anisotropy in subordinate state. Because layered structure, the anisotropy of torque when the rotated magnetic field, AC plane, it shows a very sharp tension. So we can determine the parallel field. Maybe I
hello. I have a question concerning susceptibility measurements of these crystals as well, if they can be done on slightly bigger crystals and compare A and B axes in that way as a check, or you think the domains will affect the results?
Yeah, your question is, did you measure the susceptibility?
Without the torque, but the normal susceptibility measurement.
Yeah, okay, we use the data measured by other group, and they measure the powder crystal. But we measure the AC plane anisotropy, we can determine chi A plus chi B from the our experiment and other data.
Sorry, just to comment on that. When you do that, this can be a very small signal. So when you measure two large quantities and take the difference and try to find a very small difference, it can be a lot harder than just measuring the difference directly, which is what this is doing.
Yeah.
At least that's why comparing to the straight susceptibility might be very difficult.
Yeah, okay.
We can take one more question.
If you go back to the phase diagram, that would be useful for YBCO. Yeah, for YBCO. So, we saw anisotropy or nematicity, if you like, from the Nernst effect.
You
have the blue, the dark blue, and then the pale blue, right? So, if you just do the same measurement on YBCO as a function of doping down to low dopings, you find that onset of nematicity seems to fall down at low doping, and so there seem to be two different lines.
Yeah.
And I see that your lowest data just ends short of entering that lower regime. Yeah. So again, this is another, I think it'd be very, because yeah, at the moment, you know, you haven't tested the possibility that there's in fact two regions of behavior.
Okay. Yeah, so but our noticing torque measurement is consistent with your data here,
yes,
but we never observe the enhancement of nematicity here.
Right.
Data here consistent, but here we do not observe.
So that's just on the border of where the two, where you get the change. So I think if you just went again, if you went to 8% or 9%, you would clearly have to see whether you,
yeah, but
it agrees.
But you show the nematicity increase the CDW formation in your last paper. You show the nematicity is strongly enhanced in the CDW regime.
Well, I mean, if you go lower in doping, it has nothing to do with CDW. You know, it just keeps going up.
But you already show the
12%, that's correct.
Yeah, this is your data.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I this one, but we never observe the enhancement.
Okay, but my point is more that if you go to low doping, the Nernst anisotropy does not start at T star. It starts well below.
Okay,
and you should check that.
Yeah,
that's
all. Okay, thank you.
We need to move on our time. Maybe you can do this afterwards. Okay, let's thank our speaker again.